Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome in. A hot, disgusting Tuesday in New York City. It is Evan and Tiki on The Fan. We got a ton to get to. More proof that Yankee fans are absolutely done with Anthony Volpe as they lose lifelessly last night. Will the New York Mets actually trade Mark Vientos or Ronnie Mauricio before the trade deadline? We'll get to all that plus your calls. But yesterday, before we were distracted by sports, there was a horrific tragedy here in New York City in which innocent people lost their lives, including a police officer here in the city.
Yeah, it was very sad. And, you know, we don't want to dig too deep in this because we don't fully know all of the details, but just thoughts and prayers go out to all the victims and obviously to the Perps family as well. But, you know, this one thing came out of this that we kind of have forgotten and haven't talked about in a long time, and that's head trauma and the causes and downstream effects of repeated or massive head trauma. And according to the suicide note that was left by the perpetrator here, he talked about CTE, and he said, as part of his note, study my brain. And it's scary when you think about this issue that we kind of have forgotten about now and what it could potentially do to people. Now, the NFL, this is why he blamed the NFL, and I'm not sure the exact connection other than that football, professional football makes you want to be a professional football player,
right,
and therefore you play it as a kid and maybe get hit and concussed. But I bring this up because I did a study when I was with the Today Show. I did a story on the lack of physical trainers at high school levels across the country. And it was football, but it was everything. Soccer, lacrosse. Some things were even outside of school, like skiing. You go on a skiing trip or snowboarding or skateboarding, and you fall and hit your head, and then it's not diagnosed. And then you go get hit your head again, and you just have these repeated traumas. And so this is a reminder in so many ways that head trauma and contact sports is something we can't forget about. We have to start paying attention to this again, unfortunately, because some of these studies, when they talk about the effects of head trauma on people who do mass shootings, it's pretty significant. So, again, thoughts and prayers go out to all those that lost their lives, in particular, one of the men in blue who was just on duty.
Just protecting us.
Protecting us or protecting that building, 345 Park Avenue, and lost his life. But it's hard to start a show that way, but I just want to send our thoughts and prayers out to the victims of this horrific moment.
It's a reminder that when we get worked up over the next 4 hours about stupid stuff, it really is truly stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. It's sports, and it's fun. Even when we're mad at 1 o'clock in the morning that the Mets lost the baseball game, it's a reminder that it is the candy store or the toy store,
right,
as wise men have once said. But we're here to distract you, and there is a lot to be distracted by over the next few days going into the trade deadline. And last night, see, I'm rational right now. It's been 11 hours. And 11 hours later, I can say to you, yeah, last night sucked. But to quote a wise man, no biggie. They've won 7 in a row. It's okay.
Oh, it sucked for you as a Met fan. It sucked worse for us as Yankee fans.
Well, you had a bad night. Yeah. See, the difference is right now on the state of these teams, the Met fan last night is disappointed because you lost a wild, wacky, mm-hmm, crazy baseball game.
But the way you almost won it was kind of encouraging.
No, you're right. I mean, there were some encouraging things out of it. You can find positives. I think the biggest negative is that it happened at 1 o'clock in the morning. And anytime you invest so many hours staying up late, it makes the loss worse. The Yankee fan is just disgusted. They're just angry. And both teams have big decisions to make over the next couple of days going into the trade deadline. And what's happening right now, and I'm battling this, Teague. I'm battling this as hard as I can. I'd like to think of myself, maybe it's not even true, but I like to think of myself as a rational baseball fan,
mm-hmm,
where you should never get too high and you should never get too low.
Of course.
And that goes with players. We should not over-evaluate or overvalue players when they're doing well, nor should we go to the pits of hell when they're struggling to say, get rid of them, DFA them, trade them for a bag of balls. And right now, if you're a Met fan, we are dealing with that volatile movement when it comes to Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio. Because both guys are still unproven. Ronnie Mauricio more so than Vientos.
Right.
Vientos had a great year last year. Epic moments in the postseason. He's had a terrible year up until recently. And as we sit here dreaming of a world championship and dreaming of the Mets improving themselves, both guys could be traded. There were reports yesterday that Mark Vientos is available. And when he hits basically two home runs last night, one of them got robbed by Fernando Tatis Jr., the nonsensical side of me says, you can't trade him.
Right. Even if trading him makes you better.
Yes, because he's 25. He has a chance to be a star. How could you trade him? And so as I sit here right now, trying to be as rational as I can on July 29th at 2:07 p.m., my attitude towards both Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio is you better give me a lot. Yes, to quote the Million Dollar Man, everybody's got a price. But that price better be awesome for me to move Mark Vientos or Ronnie Mauricio, because ultimately, Teague, we've talked for a while about the depth of this lineup. Both of those guys are hitting, and all of a sudden, the depth of the Met lineup doesn't feel like it's a giant hindrance anymore.
No, it doesn't. And here's the interesting thing about the trade. So you feel really, potential trade, you feel really good about Vientos after last night. You feel really good about Mauricio as well. And then you think about, well, if you trade Mark Vientos, what are you getting? And so far, what the predominant trade location has been the Chicago White Sox,
right,
and Luis Robert Jr. The problem is that if you do that and you get rid of Mark Vientos, which clears out this kind of logjam at third and second base, you also then now create a logjam in center field. Because if Jeff McNeil is not playing center field, where is he playing? Is he playing second, or do you want Brett Beatty to play second? Is Brett Beatty going to third and then Mauricio sitting, or is Mauricio playing second and Jeff McNeil is sitting? It's not quite the problem that the Yankees had in this overpopulation of outfielders, but there is a little bit of a logjam that's created if you bring in Luis Robert, because you're not trading for him and then playing him part-time, right? If you trade and get rid of Mark Vientos, he better be your everyday center fielder, and he better be damn good.
Right.
Because you then create a logjam someplace else.
Yeah.
And so the more I think about it, none of it really makes sense. Not only because Mark Vientos has been really good, and he was last night, and Mauricio as well, but you can't throw Jeff McNeil out of the lineup, can you?
No, and I think right now, Brett Beatty, Ronnie Mauricio, Jeff McNeil, and Mark Vientos should all be in the lineup, and there's a way for it to happen. We saw it last night.
Exactly.
I don't care that Jesse Winker's coming back from the IL. Jesse Winker needs to DH against righties all the time? No, he doesn't. He could be a lefty bat off the bench. Same with Starling Marte.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as long as there's performance from these young players, and we're seeing it recently, all of those guys can play. Here's what this comes down to. Do you believe in Jeff McNeil in center field? Because Vientos, Mauricio, and Beatty all being here just means Jeff McNeil needs to be the center fielder.
Yes.
And I do believe him as a center fielder. And I think what the Mets can do is make this simple. Go get a good defending fourth outfield type to kind of play a little center field, whether it's taking Jeff McNeil out of a game early getting the occasional start.
Hold on. I would then counter, do you really need to do that? Because you have Tyrone Taylor.
Well,
and you have Winker, who's coming back.
So Jesse Winker, to me, is not someone who I want to stick in the outfield. He's basically a left-handed bat off the bench or a DH.
Right.
And the problem with Tyrone Taylor is he just hasn't hit enough. So the easy answer on adding that fourth outfield type is to bring back Harrison Bader.
Mm.
If you bring back Harrison Bader, who's had a productive year and has hit lefties, then this whole thing works. But to trade Mark Vientos or Ronnie Mauricio, and again, I study Ted DiBiase. He had wise words when he was around. He still is alive, but not active. And that was everyone has a price. So yes, there's a price. Even for Tommy, who loves Mark Vientos, there's a price where we'd say fine. But does that exist? Is Luis Robert Jr. the price? Not really. So yes, I would, in a weird world, trade Vientos or Mauricio, but I need a lot back. And a center fielder who, while I'm high on Luis Robert Jr., has had a year and a half of downness and makes $20 million a year and is older than Mark Vientos, the more I think about it, and I've gone back and forth on it, and I ain't going to lie, Vientos going deep twice nearly yesterday, certainly pendulum goes the other way, that ain't the price. That ain't it. Like Johan Duran, maybe that would be the price, a top-level elite closer. Maybe even if the Yankees opened up and said, we're going to trade Cody Bellinger and Devin Williams. Like, would that be the price? Probably. But the active guys we're talking about, whether it's Merrill Kelly or Luis Robert Jr., it doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
And Vientos reminded you last night, even though it's been a very rough season, what he's capable of. And it'd be very difficult to move on for him unless you're getting something rad.
Yeah, the way I see it, and I've thought this now for a couple of days, the Mets need another reliever, someone who you can trust in the back of the bullpen. If you get lucky or if the opportunity presents itself and maybe prospects, you can get a starter or maybe a third starter. But I don't think that's happening. I don't think it's in the cards. What I see is just another reliever, and it really kind of feels like all you need. The Mets have been so odd because we feel like they're flawed. But as we've talked about many times, every team is flawed. But the one thing about the Mets that you tend to see also is that they get streaky. And when they're streaky good, it's really good.
But here's the problem with the streakiness, Teague. We are sitting here 3 days before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And despite last night's Met loss, they're on a good streak.
Okay, but let me ask you this.
Yes.
Is any trade they commence, is it going to fix the streakiness? And the answer is no.
No, it's not going to fix the streakiness, but our opinions, as much as I try, I sit here and I try, I beg to myself, Evan, don't get too up on the hots and don't get too down on the colds.
Right.
We're being affected by the hots right now.
I know, but
Ronnie Mauricio hits another epic game time home run. No one wants to trade him.
But hold on, is it this timing?
It's all timing.
If they were cold as ice right now, we'd be saying like, "Oh, we got to get somebody, get one of these kids out of here. I want somebody that's gonna get them right." But because they're hot, it feels like, well, this is who they are. But when they're bad and when they're streaky and they're not hitting with runners in scoring position, it's like, well, this is who they are.
So, Teague, this is why you're very important today, because you're important every day, but you're even more important today. As much as I try to be calm, not get too nuts about the hots and the lows of a baseball season.
Right.
I'm a human.
Of course you
Tommy are. Tommy doesn't even pretend. He's always going to be that way. Sean is extremely that way. You're Tiki Barber. You're an IBO. So tell us.
I'm truly an IBO.
You really are. I try to be, but I know my flaws.
You can't help yourself.
I can look in the mirror and call myself out for my issues. So me and Tommy as Met fans are... We're by your knee. We're bending over. No, that's other. We're on our knees.
On bended knee.
We're on bend. That was what
I'm not a deity.
You do what you want, Evan.
Bow
I'm not
down
doing
to
that.
To the Tao of Tiki, I will accept your offerings.
So you tell us, the irrational Met fan.
Yes.
Should we believe this and say no trades? We don't need to add a bat. Mauricio, Vientos, Beatty. Let's believe in the kids. Or should the Mets be aggressive, thinking, you know what? Let's go win a world championship. And if Mark Vientos can net you something back that makes you better in the short term, screw it and go do it.
So after we had this conversation yesterday, and you kept saying it, like I was kind of dismissing it, but I'd bring it up, but I would dismiss it. You kept saying it. You can't forget what Mark Vientos did last year.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. And not only because it was 27 home runs in 100-plus games, just over 100 games, it was what he did in the postseason in clutch moments. You can't teach clutch. You can't.
Right.
Some guys have these quick heartbeats, and it's like, oh, man, I'm nervous. What am I going to do? I can't fail here. And they fail because they're so anxious about it. Now, anxiety is nothing. It's not really that bad. It's really just your body gearing itself up to do something, right? Like when you get nervous because you get scared at night, it's because your body is gearing itself up to run. You know what I mean? So what Mark Vientos gets that anxiousness, he responds. And we saw it last year. And we kind of saw it last night. And we're going to walk. The base is loaded. Mark, you're slumping. We're going to get you out. Okay. Watch me go up.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's something about his slow heartbeat that I can't now not forget what he did last year.
No, I agree with
you. So you can't move off from him. And with Mauricio, that ninth inning home run, how like effortless was that?
It was incredible.
It was so smooth, that long ass just on the outside, just on the outside. He just cooked that thing and just it looked effortless. And easy.
And he did it again, back-to-back games in which he had a game-tying home run off guys who don't give up home runs.
And so what you're seeing are two kids who have the clutch gene, and the last thing you want is to let those guys go.
No, you're right.
If you have it's one thing to have good players. It's another to good players that are also clutch. And I think you have that. So calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to go win the world at the trade deadline. Just get what you need and trust these guys.
According to Will Salmon, who does a wonderful job covering the Mets for The Athletic, he says, quote, the Mets would only trade Mark Vientos for a rental if it was a significant player coming back. who is a significant enough rental player to trade him today?
Well, that means it's somebody that we're not even thinking of.
Well, okay, so I started to think of it.
Right.
Like, no offense to Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly, who are starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not them.
Right.
Johan Duran doesn't qualify. He's not a rental player. Luis Robert Jr. is not a rental player. And honestly, I swear to God, and I'm not trying to start something here, the only rental player that I could come to where it's a debate or a discussion happens to play for the New York Yankees. And you know who that guy is?
Who?
Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
He's the only guy I could think of because, and look, I'm not even saying I would make that trade for the same reasons you just laid out about Mark and his clutch gene and the fact mm-hmm. he's young and under team control for a long time, but a rental player means they're gone potentially at the end of the year.
Right.
What kind of player, and I believe Will Salmon's reporting, they would only do it for a rental player who is significant. What is that?
Great. So now everyone's plan A and plan B.
No, but hey, be a baseball fan. Who is that guy? Who is the rental player that's significant enough that the Mets would say, we're going to trade Mark Vientos? So eliminate the Luis Robert
rental
Jr.'s of the world.
Rental player? I mean...
Who is it?
If I was saying surprise, he's not rental, I would say Paul Skeens. But that's not happening.
No, it's a rental. So is it Eugenio Suarez?
He's not a rental.
Is it Suarez? You know, he's had a great year. He did get hurt last night. Hopefully everything comes back clean on him.
X-rays were negative.
Okay, so what are they saying, day to day?
Yeah.
Okay, so good news for... Is that the guy? You tell me. I'm trying to be rational.
I don't know. I have to. You look at the free agents more than I do, but...
It's Suarez would be that guy, but... he's not also a center fielder. You're talking about the position of depth with the young guys at third base.
Right. If you made that trade, if that's the deal that David Stearns would be willing to make, you're sticking with what's their current plan, which is Jeff McNeil's playing a lot of center field.
Yep.
And I said this a few weeks ago about the Mets improving their offense. They can improve their offense without adding a center fielder because I do trust Jeff McNeil in center. And I do think Tyrone Taylor's defense is good enough for him to come in late in games.
Mm-hmm.
So they could improve their offense if we still believe they need to improve their offense by not necessarily adding a center fielder. They've been connected to Brandon Lau of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's not a center fielder. If the Mets acquired him, he's probably the DH. Maybe he plays second base,
right,
which is the position he plays now once he comes off the IL. So I don't think they need to be married to a center fielder, but I'm afraid to trade Mark Vientos for a rental like that.
I would be as well.
The guy's got 5 more years of team control.
I agreed. And so here's the balance that's hard to figure out. Are you all in? I mean, like, for real all in, not like just speaking it, rhetoric all in, lip service all in. Are you like really all in?
You know what I don't like about that phrase?
If you're really all in
and
you're trying to win it by throwing everything to the wind, which by the way is stupid because you compromise yourself for next year and the years to come in case, you know, baseball happens and even though you're the superior team, you lose. So I don't think the Mets should be all in like that. And so when you're talking about this rental player, it doesn't make sense.
Well, also,
I don't think there is that guy who's going to truly put you all in. There isn't. Who is it?
Honestly, it would probably be, and it's not going to happen, and I don't think it should happen, but it's if the Yankees ever sold guys off.
Right.
Because I think Cody Bellinger and Devin Williams are game changers.
But we had that conversation yesterday. The Yankees are not.
No.
Because every year, the Yankees are trying to win a World
Series. And they shouldn't. I'm not saying they should. I'm trying to answer the question of who those guys are. And we need to retire the term all in. Because no one truly is all in.
Right.
No one truly says, take whatever prospect you want. We want the player so badly. There's always lines in the sand. Now, there are different years. Like, for example, last year, the Mets were going to be more protective of their prospects.
Mm-hmm.
This year, they'll probably be a little bit more aggressive with their prospects. But they're not going to trade everybody. They're not trading Carson Benj. They're not trading Nolan McClain. They're not trading Jonah Tong. That doesn't mean they aren't aggressively trying to win. It just means there's lines in the sand.
Yeah.
And there's always lines in the sands in terms of how aggressive a team will be. But nights like last night, despite the Mets losing, makes it very difficult to trade Mark Vientos and very difficult to trade Ronnie Mauricio. We'll get into the Yankee issues from last night as well and what they need to do. The Mets and the Yankees coming off L's last night, looking to bounce back tonight. If you were at Yankee Stadium last night, it just sucked because the offense scratched out 2 runs in the first inning and did nothing afterwards. If you were not at the ballpark last night, it not only sucked because you watched that, but then we had to deal with Luka. And I don't understand. It's not like Luka plays for the Nets or the Knicks, where it's like, Josh Hart's at the game. Let's have him pop on.
Right. He's a superstar. Let's put him on air. People will love it.
Except we won't love it.
No, because he was boring as hell.
Yeah, he was putting us to sleep. He didn't care to be there. He didn't want to be there. Kay asked dumbass questions. Like, it was boring. And, you know, you're a Yankee fan. Tell me if I'm right, Sean, because you were not at the game, so you're watching the game on TV the way most of us are. It actually would annoy me more when I'm watching my baseball team in the midst of stinking, and now I got to be distracted with the formerly fat Luca boring us to tears, saying nothing.
It is a very, very important week in Yankee land. We are 3 days removed from the Judge injury. Now, I'm sure I probably would have felt this way in mid-August, too. I'm in no mood for a talk show with an athlete that plays in the city of Los Angeles while I'm watching my baseball team struggle to try to win a division game that they eventually lost. It pissed me off. There's no place for it. And for all the talk and all the yelling about Yes Network this and Yes Network that, last night was one of the more egregious moments in Yankee broadcasting baseball for the time and place. And I don't think that's being hyperbole.
And you're obviously leaving out the most egregious part.
Which was?
It's the Yes Network. It was Michael Kay's duty to ask Luca very simply, hey, Luca, is it true you're renting in L.A. and buying in Brooklyn?
The Nets still in the league.
You know what, Evan? At least we would have gotten something out of it, right?
Yes.
That would have been interesting.
Thank you.
Asking if he makes his own shoes was not interesting.
No. Why do we need that? We don't need
care.
A talk show. We're watching
the
game.
I'm not buying them. Nobody is buying them.
Yeah.
So annoying.
And speaking of
not
which,
New York.
Speaking of shoes, can someone explain to me why Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker took the shoes off of Roman Reigns and held it in the air in the middle of the ring? What was that about, Tommy? Did you see that?
The heck are you talking about?
I always took that as a symbol of retirement, right? When you take your boots off, a wrestler leaves them in the middle of the ring. Are they trying to say they're going to...
But holding them up high?
Well, maybe they're saying, Teak, they're going to retire Roman Reigns.
Is that
put him out
saying?
Of action. That's the only thing I can think of, symbolism with the boots. That's always what it's been.
So last night, in between the Yankee game and me delaying the start of the Met game so I wouldn't fall asleep during commercials, I was watching Raw, and Roman Reigns graced us with his presence, which is a rarity, and he got destroyed. You know, go-home show for Raw before SummerSlam. So I get it. And after Roman got destroyed, which was cool, I loved all of it, they ripped his sneakers off. I'm like, what the hell is this about? Why are they taking his sneakers off? But now Tommy brings up a good point. Maybe that was symbolism for they're going to retire the Tribal Chief at SummerSlam.
But wouldn't they wait to SummerSlam to do that?
Well, because they're going to lose at SummerSlam.
I know, but wouldn't it would have been dramatic if he loses at SummerSlam.
And then they take his sneakers?
And then they take his sneakers off, throw him up in the air, they land right in the middle of the ring, and he gets carried out because he's, knocked unconscious and... just done.
So here's the thing, Teak. You're hobnobbing with CeCe Sabathia, Derek Jeter, Michael Strahan. The truth is, you should be hobnobbing with Paul Levesque, Triple H, and start booking this crap.
Right?
Now let's get to your phone calls, 888-808-1019. We sit here 48 hours away from the trade deadline and major questions on what both teams are going to do. Johnny is calling from Queens. Good afternoon today, Johnny.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Love the show.
Thank you, man. What's up?
Diehard Mets fan, also a rational fan. Guys, I think Bientos has to be traded. It hurts to say. I'm going to give you a couple reasons why. I think out of the prospects that we have, big league ready, Mauricio, to me, has the highest ceiling. He's the guy.
Agreed.
Yeah. Acuna, I'm not sure the value there. I'm not sure you can get a decent return for him, although I would like to move him. But I think Bientos is the one prospect that's considered a one-way player. I think he's awful on defense. I think he's slow on the base pads. The only thing we're actually looking at here is his bat. And that, up until, the All-Star break, we haven't really seen much of it.
Right.
I think right now he's showing some light, and I think we may have, some spark there where we could get something in return. And I think the return has to be pitching, whether that's bullpen or a starter. I think that's the return that we need to get. I'm not sure who that may be. I would like to see potentially a – Sandy Alcantara, I don't know what that's going to take, or a Zach Gallen, and if it's a reliever, it's got to be Duran. I'm not sure center fielder is the way to go. I know the Mets are looking that direction. I'm not even big on Robert, to be honest with you. He's always hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably choose Mullins over that, and Mullins is not even, somebody I'm really, really considering.
Right.
But I think as much love as I have for Vientos and what he did for us last year, I'm also not attached. And I think... in a few years from now, maybe not a few years, but definitely in the near future, we're going to have a DH problem where you may look at Nimmo as a DH with his foot issue. Soto eventually will fall into that DH spot, and if we re-sign Pete, Pete's going to be another one.
Right.
And I think Gensel's only position is a DH on this team.
I mean, technically he could play first, but he butchers it over there sometimes.
He can play three positions. DH, which isn't really a position.
Yep.
First base and third base.
Right.
He's not good at either position, but he's playable at both positions.
Yes.
And down the road, I'm not talking about this year, and I hate to think about this down the road, but it is certainly on the table, Pete Alonso may not be here. And if Pete Alonso's not here, there is that possibility Mark Vientos' role into the future would be as a first baseman. And if he's playing a lot of first base, my expectation is he will grow to be a better defensive player.
Well, I don't think, I mean, I know he's right about Pete eventually having to be a DH at some point in his career, but I don't think it's anytime soon.
Well, and that's the thing. So you're talking about Soto, Nimmo, and Alonso eventually being DHs. I think we're talking 3-4 years from now. Now, I think, periodically, it'd be nice to have them DH to keep them fresh and healthy, but you're not talking about next year. Mark Vientos has team control over the next 4 years. And also, right now, because you asked me this yesterday, you said, hey, if everybody's hitting, how do you play all these guys? Sure. And the way you play all these guys is with Mark Vientos being the designated hitter. So then that defensive issue our last caller mentioned is irrelevant.
Right.
And by the way, the other DH options the Mets have are Starling Marte and Jesse Winker. I mean, right. They don't need to play every day.
No, they definitely
don't. Those guys are probably best suited to be fourth outfielders or bats off the bench.
Right, especially Marte. I mean, sometimes he gets hot and it feels like we need to have him in the lineup, but there are other times where he's just quiet. Now, part of that is because over the last few years, he's been banged up and not always available. But look, for me, I think Mark Vientos is primarily going to be a DH. I don't see him playing in huge moments. He's going to get defensively substituted for if you need him to be either, especially a third base.
And you know why that's okay? Because Mauricio is a good defender.
Right.
Beatty's become a good defender. So his role on this team moving into the future could be first base like we talked about with Pete, but is likely the DH. And the Mets have been searching for a DH ever since it was instituted in the National League.
Right.
Jimmy is calling from Levittown. How are we doing today, Jimmy?
Hey, Jimmy.
How we doing, boys? So I go to the game last night, and you drop $600 with friends and all, and you sit there and you see two runs scored on walks. And then for the next 6 hours, the exit velocity of the balls were equivalent to like a third-grade girl softball team. And I'm saying to myself, no, I don't think this is even funny no more, boys. Like, you know, I think we're at the point now, are we slumping or do we really just stink? And I'm sorry to say, I think this team stinks. I really do. Whatever can go wrong has gone wrong.
Jimmy, it's
going
funny
to the game
say,
last night.
It's funny you say that, Jimmy, because there was a moment with the when Jazz couldn't get the ball out of his glove. I wrote in our text chat. I was like, dude, every one of these position players is pissing me off. Every one of them, even the ones I really like. So it's fundamentally, you know, everyone is fundamentally flawed at some point over the last month and a half.
It's bad. And like, you know, Goldie, we love Goldie. He ain't no better than LeMahieu's been. I mean, he's 2 weeks away from being a DFA'd. You know, going to the game last night was going to watch The Godfather without Judge Air, was going to watch The Godfather without Pacino. It's useless. Right. I hate to say it.
It's a non-watchable movie.
Listen, oh, my God, it's only sports. We're not supposed to get upset.
Right.
I walk out of there with a stupid Yankee bucket hat. I bought a Thurman jersey on the way out. I'm like, let's just get the football. I can't do this anymore.
Hey, Jimmy, at least you made yourself feel good by spending some money.
Yeah, I made it feel good. Look, he brings up a great question that we always have to ask ourselves when a team is struggling for a long period of time, which is, what are they?
Yeah.
And the Yankees, if you go back to late May, and so that's a significant amount of time now. We're talking about a 2 full-month period of time. If you want to make that line of demarcation May 30th, right? They are a sub-500 team.
Right.
Now, the caveat to all this is I played this game with the Mets a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, since May 10th, they're a 500 team.
Right.
And Tommy on the other end did that last year when the Mets were playing well. Hey, since June 1st, they're the best team in the National League. Like, those are all numbers that you can't argue because they're numbers. What's difficult is discerning, well, what are they truly? Like, what are the Yankees?
Right.
Like, are we convinced they're a sub-500 team because that's the way they've played for 51 games? You tell me. I'm not. I still think this is an offense that, even without Aaron Judge, can function. Now, last night doesn't help my cause because they didn't function last night. They played like garbage last night.
Like drunks.
So it's tough for me to sit here on the radio and defend them passionately because all you got to do is point to the garbage you watched last night. But I still look at this lineup and I see Trent Grisham as an 800 OPS. Mm-hmm. I see Jason Dominguez, who actually was a bright side last night, as a guy who's an emerging offensive talent. We talked about Cody Bellinger, who's at an 850 OPS. Giancarlo Stanton has produced since he's come off the IL. Jazz has produced since he's come off the IL. Goldie kills lefties, unfortunately. Can't hit righties at this point. I look at that lineup and I say, that should be a functioning lineup.
Of course.
So should I be. Side on the, and again, this is maybe being an IBO and not being in the muck the way Jimmy is and the way Sean is. I think they're better than the way he just described. I do.
Yeah, look, I like the depth of the lineup, but there's just something like missing with it that's hard to tangibly point at.
Right, and, because you have these games where they score two runs on two walks.
And if I could take... I know it's a different team, it's a different year, same uniform, some of the same parts. What does the Yankees year in and year out in the postseason is not hitting good pitching in the postseason enough to win series, especially series that you're going to have to play some road games in. And that's what I worry about. You're going to have more nights like last night, in my opinion, in October, than the nights where you're scoring 22 runs versus the Milwaukee Brewers in April. And I think also, when judging OPS and all these other numbers, Dominguez and Jazz fit this, so I'm going to exclude them.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should be operating with this Yankee team. What have they looked like in June and July?
No, that's the issue, because in June and July, since May 30th, if we use that as a line of demarcation, not only are the Yankees 22-29, which is not good, that is only one game better than the White Sox, who have the worst record in the American League since May 30th.
But so they were so good that they're still 8 games over .500.
Correct. That's right. Why the question he asks, like, what are the New York Yankees, is a complicated one to answer because for 2 months, they've been bad. But until a week and a half ago, I could have played this same game about the Mets.
Yeah.
And I did on the Rico. I said, hey, since May 15th, they're this and that. Well, then they won 7 in a row. Baseball's a streaky-ass sport.
Yankees will thump their chest and have a moment in August. There's no doubt about it. But I don't think we should ignore what we've seen in June and July come October because we've seen it too many times before.
Chris in Manhattan, how you doing today, Chris?
Hey, guys, I'm doing good. You know, by the way, Evan, you talk about DeVientos maybe at first base. You know, I don't want to think about that without Pete. But who's to say Mauricio couldn't move over there either? He's tall. But I wanted to talk about, I think there's more to this DeVientos thing. I was reading on CBS Sports. They interviewed him, and he said, I'm swinging better now, but I'm playing a lot less. And then he says here something to the effect of, it's extremely difficult to improve by not playing as much. But there's really no point in saying anything to management because nobody cares. Nobody cares, to be honest, how I feel. It's the business.
Yes.
That doesn't sound good.
Well, and Carlos Mendoza basically confirmed that because when Mendy was asked about Mark Viendos, he says he's not happy, but he also understands he's got an opportunity, was in the lineup to help us win baseball game. He works hard. He continues to grind, make adjustments. We're going to need him. So he's telling you, you got to hit to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought this comment by Mark Vientos almost made me sad. I'm going to read you a quote from Mark Vientos. I wanted to hear it, but it's only in print because it was executed by the writer who interviewed him at the time, Tim Britton, and Will Salmon, who did a great job for the Athletics. So there's no audio to hear his tone. But tell me if this doesn't make you sad. This is Mark Vientos when asked about the trade rumors. I feel like I've never been someone that's been liked. I feel like last year was the first year that people were rooting for me. It's no different, to be honest with you. What? Going up through the minor leagues, I was always that guy that nobody really counted on. Last year, I proved myself, and this year, it's the same thing. It's nothing new. It made me kind of sad. Like, he's like, no one likes me. No one believes in me.
I mean, he's also putting that chip on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people play their whole careers like that.
Yeah.
They feel like the slight that happened at some point early in their career is still the slight that will last them their entire career, even if it's not necessarily the case. Now, he's still young, so it's not truly the case. But I remember Jesse Armstead. You got to know Jesse Armstead.
Yeah.
Jesse Armstead played with a chip on his shoulder his entire career just because he was underdrafted coming out of school, right? And so it was what he had to tell himself. So maybe that's what he's doing. Or maybe it's also the truth.
Oh, I think it's...
But it doesn't matter, right? As long as he uses it productively, who cares?
You're right. And I do think it's the truth. And the reason I think it's the truth is, let's go all the way back to 2022. Not sure how many people remember this.
Yeah.
But Buck Showalter would take shots at him.
Like, basically, you know, has he really had a great year in the minor leagues? Because I remember a reporter said, how about Mark Vientos' year in the minors? It was a really good year. And Buck questioned it. And that was my first sign of, wow, I don't think they like this guy.
Right.
Then you go back to last year. They signed J.D. Martinez, but he's not ready. Hmm. And I remember sitting here on the radio with you, certainly on my podcast, saying, how come Vientos isn't in the major leagues? They sent him to the minors. Then they call him up. He hits a game-winning home run. And what did they do? They sent him to the minors.
Yeah.
It took Vientos slamming down the door for the Mets to believe in him. And now, as we sit here in late July, he is being connected with good reporting, whether it's Will Salmon or it's Andy Martino,
right,
that the Mets are open to trading him. So it kind of proves Mark's point that whether it was the prior administration or the current administration, he doesn't feel like anybody believes in him. And the evidence is kind of there that
if he keeps hitting home runs because he feels slighted, just to proving them wrong, good for him.
Absolutely.
And good for the Mets. Use it however you need to use it.
As long as you're productive.
Exactly.
John is in Hempstead. What's up, John?
Hey, quick question. What do you think the Mets should do with Jeff McNeil if they trade for a center fielder?
I think if they trade for a center fielder, he ends up mostly playing second base. I mean, that's probably what ends up happening, and then you're looking at Mauricio and Beatty sharing third base or designated hitter. Like I said this earlier, the Mets do not need to be married to Starling Marte and Jesse Winker at DH.
No.
That was their plan coming into the season, but to me that plan always was subject to change if a young player stepped up and proved they need to play all the time.
The challenge would be, you know, what is Jeff McNeil giving you as a designated hitter as opposed to a pretty decent fielder, no matter where you put him?
Right.
You'd almost rather have him in the field and DH somebody else than take his athleticism, he's just a baseball player.
Right.
Like he has that IQ to throw him wherever. You could probably put him at third base and he'd figure it out somehow. Right. So I think DHing him is kind of a waste of his baseball IQ, if that makes sense.
If you add a bat, whether it's Brandon Lau or it's Cedric Mullins or it's Eugenio Suarez or it's Luis Robert Jr., whatever bat you add, because the Mets have the flexibility to add a bat, just move guys around.
Yep.
Who's coming out of the lineup? Because last night, I think we saw the Mets' best lineup. It featured Mauricio at third, Beatty at second, Vientos at DH, McNeil in center field. If you add somebody, one of those guys is not playing. Who's the guy? That's a tough question.
Right.
Lukey, who's the guy?
Brett Beatty.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
I think because when I look at his...
He's good.
He's been...
Very streaky.
Very streaky, and he's on a bad streak right now on this road trip. I keep going back to the ceiling. I think Mauricio, star potential. Vientos, star potential. Beatty, it's just up and down and up and down, and when he's down, it's really bad, and I just think he has the least amount of ability of all the four young players.
But you know what he does have? Over Mark Vientos, for now over Ronnie Mauricio.
Flexibility as far as positions?
He's better defensively. He's flat out better than all of those guys defensively.
He's more solid. Mauricio, I think, will be the better defender. You agree with that?
I think he will be. Potential.
Yeah.
The potential is there with Ronnie Mauricio. We're seeing it with Brett Beatty right now. And his defense has been shockingly really good at both of those positions. But it's a tough question. Like, who is the odd man out? I think to answer it, it's probably a day-by-day matchup kind of thing.
There's only an odd man out if you trade for somebody.
If you add somebody.
If you add what you think is, I don't know, the all-in move. And I'm overusing the term, but just because I know we banned it for the show for today.
Well, because I think it's misused.
Of course it is, but I don't know what else to call it. Like
aggressive.
Aggressive move. So the aggressive move creates a backlog, and it creates a... It creates good players for this Mets team not playing every day.
Here's the way I look at buying at the trade deadline, because I think there's some confusion. And this involves the Yankees and what they should do, and certainly harken back to the Mets last year. I wanted the Mets last year, a team I didn't fully believe in, a team that wasn't locked into a playoff spot. I wanted them to take out lottery tickets. I agreed with David Stearns did. I didn't want to trade big prospects. I would have that argument. I think me and Tommy had the argument.
Right.
It was a good one. But I was on the side of, I want to be aggressive, but not too aggressive. It's like a soft bidding, if you will, because I didn't fully believe in the team. I certainly believe in this team more. So I would be more aggressive. I'd be more willing to trade top prospects. I'd be more willing to go be aggressive and get real good players. Am I at the point where I don't care about the future? Of course not. Like, there's a line in the sand where, am I trading Jonah Tong? No. Am I trading Carson Bench, who probably should be here? That's a discussion for another day. No. Then on the Yankee side of things, like I was passionately saying yesterday, the Yankees selling is ridiculous. They should never sell.
Right.
But I understand, and I would side with this, not being too aggressive.
All right. So
not taking Spencer Jones and trading him for a rental, while last year, maybe it made more sense. So I think the belief in the team amplifies how aggressive you should actually be at the deadline. It's not all or nothing. I don't believe in that. And last year, I believed the Mets should be strategic. This year, I'd be a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah.
And vice versa with the Yankees.
Yeah, I think the challenge for David Stearns and just this Mets organization is that it feels like it's available this year. I'm not saying that they're in line or they're the favorite to win a World Series, but it feels available this year because every other team has their own issues.
It depends on the players, though. Like, there are certain... I hate to bring it back to this, and I'm sorry, because I don't want the Yankees to sell. But the Yankees have a package of players where I would have a very tough time saying no in getting those two guys. And it's Cody Bellinger and Devin Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you came to me, and I know that's your plan B, and we could all have fun with
not
it.
Not happening.
And it's not happening. I know that.
Right.
But I'm trying to at least give you, with players we're all familiar with, where I would say, boy, I got to get aggressive because that makes me World Series favorites.
Right.
Like, I honestly think that. If the Mets got Devin Williams in their bullpen and Cody Bellinger to play center field, I think we're the freaking favorites.
The way you're talking like that, by the way, only further solidifies the Yankees probably should think about selling because the Mets wouldn't be the only ones feeling that way about players
like that. No, you're right. But I wouldn't do it because I still think you have a chance to win.
Yeah. The only thing I disagree, Evan, I know we disagreed on this yesterday, but the idea of if you're not all in, then it's okay to hit. If you don't believe in the team enough to make truly aggressive moves, then I think you've answered the question.
No.
Maybe you should consider selling.
I'll tell you why you're wrong. Look at the Mets last year. Should the Mets have sold last year?
No,
they were not in a playoff spot on July 31st. Let's keep that in mind.
This is where you and I differ, though. They still lost in the NLCS.
They got to the NLCS.
But that's not what you're playing for.
And they did what I wanted. Like, I remember Tommy and I argued about it. I got my way, right? Because they got relievers. They didn't give up anything. I was like a safe kind of like we're going for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of worked, right? They made the playoffs. They got to the NLCS. It worked. So if the Yankees did something similar... and it worked, then what are you complaining about? You didn't even give up top prospects.
If the Yankees did something similar and lose in the ALCS, it's a failure. They just made the World Series last year. It's way different than the Mets coming out of nowhere 11, 14 games
on. It may be a failure, but you're saying selling guys off would be better than the outcome of getting to the American League Championship Series?
If it enhances your chance of making and winning a World Series next year?
You don't know that because you're getting prospects back. You have no idea.
Okay. But
how'd Clint Frazier turn out? You want to talk about Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman? Right. How'd that work out?
I'm talking about acquiring prospects to completely load up to have a big offseason or trade deadline next year with your team.
I know, but I'm equating to what you don't know what you're getting out of prospects. And if you're a playoff team, you should try to win, even if it's not as aggressive as some people want. Like, the Mets are a great example of that last year. They took out the lottery tickets. I can't even say they hit on those lottery tickets.
Right.
But they got to the NLCS.
Right.
Without giving
it
up.
It worked.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say, it worked.
And that's what I would do if I'm the Yankees, by the way.
And it was also something, I don't want to say magical because that's stupid. It takes playing on the field, but it just felt something team building wise, inside, internal, that lifted them. Like they played above themselves a lot of the season.
So it was a purple blob.
It was, but it was really probably OMG, but you know what I mean.
But it was magic, right?
It just felt like something else was there.
Okay. Not all teams catch the magic in June.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't catch the magic till July.
Yes.
Sometimes they don't catch it till August. I got an example we're going to play on WFAN Flashback coming up in a little bit, in which the Mets caught their magic 10 years ago on July 31st. Like, there was no sign that 2015 was going to be special. And then craziness ensued over 3 days. We'll get to that a little bit later on. Plus your calls at 888-808-1019. Plus, last night is proof that Major League Baseball's got to think long and hard about drastic changes when it comes to umpiring.